And a little bit of a surprise opening tonight here for Talkin' Fugitive with Kitty and Bobby and Ken. And if you were surprised by the somewhat different opening, why, we were surprised here as well. But anyway, a minor part of the program. We're off and running. If you want to be part of the program, 800-407-KSAV or talk at KSAV.org. This week is going to be part two of which would be Acts 3 and 4 of the episode The Trial by Fire, which was a favorite of everyone, apparently. So with that as the backdrop, here is moderator Bobby Neer.
Thank you very much, Dave. Before we get into Acts 3 and 4 of tonight's episode, Trial by Fire, let's take a few moments out to mention the cast, something that we rarely do. Captain Eckhart is played by Charles Aidman, a longtime character actor, familiar to many who were around back then. His wife is played by Marion Ross, who less than a decade later after this episode would play Richie Cunningham's mother on the series Happy Days for about 250 episodes. But for our purposes, even more interesting is that his son in this story is played by Tommy Reddick, who was the original boy with the beautiful collie Wonder Dog in the long-running series Lassie, a show that probably only Dave is old enough to remember. No. Really, I watched it religiously when I was a kid. Before there was The Fugitive and The Twilight Zone in my life, there was Lassie. Eventually, Tommy Reddick outgrew the part and was replaced by a little blonde-haired boy named John Provost. And amazingly, at the right time, he's on Dave's Talking Television program tonight, shortly after this one. He's written a book about his days on the show. Sadly, however, this is not a Lassie reunion, since Tommy Reddick met the same fate a lot of kids actors run into, including a bout with drugs, and he died while in his 40s. We had no idea that Dave's show would have this on tonight, so this is a big surprise and quite a coincidence, and I do plan to listen. I'm looking forward to it. Okay, back to Trial by Fire. In the first two acts, we saw that a man had come forward to claim that he was driving behind Kimball the night of the crime and saw a one-armed man run from the Kimball house. He did not stop, however, since he was on his way out of the country. Now, in our last program, I was virtually hooted down by my co-moderators when I suggested that this would never be enough to sway a jury and gain Kimball his freedom. And so, I'm a reasonable man sometimes, and in the intervening 2 weeks, I have given this a lot of thought, and I can say at last to my co-host, I haven't changed my mind one bit. I think Kimball would be nuts to give himself up for this, since the one-armed man, even if they find him, will claim he did nothing, and they aren't going to let Kimball go unless there is rock-hard evidence and somebody else to hang the crime on. This isn't going to do it. I simply cannot imagine a man who was sitting on death row being released by a jury unless the real perpetrator is in the courtroom. But Kimball considers it and eventually decides to take the chance. The story, however, hits the headlines in the papers big time, and it seems that a convict already in prison sees it, and he has some news for Gerard and the prosecutor, namely that he once sold some drugs to Captain Eckhart, some morphine specifically, which is going to cast some long shadows on his testimony. Gerard will have quite a bit to say on this, and so will Kitty in the second half of this show. In the meantime, Kimball has no idea Eckhart has kept this a secret, mainly from his son, and it's Donna especially who senses that something is wrong. And that sets into motion a lot of doubt and adds a very uneasy feeling to this episode. Ken, I'm going to you first tonight because I went back and read your review in which you started by stating, "Welcome back, Donna. It's been way too long since we saw you." And you ended your review by saying that any episode that highlights Donna automatically gets a 10 rating from you. And I have to say that I know you and I both feel about how we both feel about Donna and how she should have been in this series far more than she was. And I think you would agree, would you not, that once again, in a small part, she is what turns the wheels here. It's, after all, her gut feeling that Eckhart is hiding something that makes the difference. What do you think?
Yes, absolutely. Donna is an integral and a very important part of this series. And I've said it over and over again that the producers, they blew it by not using her more. You know, we saw her in season one. We didn't see her in season two, I believe I'm correct, right?
Wait a minute. This is season three. You know, you may be right about that.
Yeah, she was not in season two.
That's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, and then in season three, we see her in this episode, so we get more of a feel for her. Of course, she comes back a couple more episodes, season three, and of course, season four. But I like this episode because of the witness. This is really intriguing to me, and I feel that the producers should have developed this story even more. And I think this episode also is out of place as far as how they ran the production of the whole series. This episode should have been in season four. It should have been a two-parter, and
yes,
then they could have developed it even farther.
Yeah.
But what you're saying about Donna is correct, because you get a feeling that she really cares for her brother. She wants him free. And Kimball, let's face it, he's running around in circles, isn't he? He's running all over the country, running into family feuds, getting kidnapped, getting beaten up, you know, getting stuck on a boat with Marcy King, you know. So you asked the question last week, should he turn himself in? Should he try for a trial? And you know what? I told you, yes, he should, because he's running around. He's got to try.
Well, I got to admit, since you put it like that, back then, I'm starting to think he might be safer in jail.
But really, and then Donna should have been developed throughout the series. This is a good starting point, you know. You see the relationship, and she's hesitant, and I like that. She's questioning it. And the prosecutor, what is he doing, you know? You got to check out this guy thoroughly. You know, isn't there something called discovery?
Was that in effect back then? I'm not, you know, I don't know.
Well,
changed over the years. I mean, how long are you talking about sharing the information that you get?
Yes.
I don't think back then they had that.
Really?
Yeah, I think it was more like the old Perry Mason days where you
you
hid everything.
When did discovery come about, where both sides had to
develop
all the...
I think you mean disclosure.
Disclosure,
well,
yeah.
They call it Discovering California, but I still think it was late 70s.
Wow. Well, this episode is from 65, and I want to get back to Donna for a second. You know, Ken, we often talk about David Jansen and his legendary facial mannerisms and how he conveys things without saying anything. She's his equal in this episode, don't you think?
Yes.
I mean, she walks around, her mouth is turned down, she's looking to the side, there's something bothering her, she can't figure out what it is, I don't feel right about it, I'm nervous. Well, she's always nervous about her brother, but in this case, without really knowing what is going on, the lawyer doesn't think anything is going on, and she just goes, nah, something's not right. Something's not right here. So that's a great acting performance. And, you know, she and David Jansen got along very well on the set. And I think she learned a lot from him and does that in an amazing manner. What do you think, Kitty? Do you agree with this, that she's mighty important at this point in the story?
Oh, well, of course. I mean, because she's kind of the catalyst of the story. That's how she's been set up. She's the one who tells Kimball in the first place that a witness has come forward. So, of course, she's important. I think she's been important in all the episodes she's appeared in. I mean,
right.
How could the sister of the fugitive not be important?
Well, somebody should have told that to the producers, like Ken said. Because she's so far... I mean, it's almost incredible how seldomly you see her in this story, in this series. I suppose they would say, well, you know, he's traveling the country and she's stuck there... back home, and she's got kids and a husband, so how much reasonably can you expect them to have contact? Getting on the phone is, of course, risky because Gerard may have the phone tapped, and so because of that, I think that's what they were thinking. They're too far apart to really make any difference here. So, but my feelings, I have to say that at this point in this story, I still have not changed my mind about Kimball turning himself in. I just think this is too high a risk thing to do if you don't have In other words, if let's put it this way. If they had the one armed man, he'd been arrested for some other reason, say, and they had him in jail, and then this guy comes along and says, that's the guy. That's the guy I saw that night out in the street. That's him. Then you go, and then I would say to Kimmel, well, you know, this is pretty damn good. I mean, maybe you ought to take a shot at it now. Is it reasonably going to get any better than this? Then he could sit there and say it. But Ken, tell me, what's going to happen if he goes into court? Let's just say he goes through with it here. They're going to get into court, and you're going to put in this Act Three. They have that little hearing there with the judge, and he's on the stand, and the prosecutor's grilling Eckerd and all of that, and he says, "Well, I saw a man out in the street, blah 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 blah," and then we never get an answer to that because the judge says, "Well, I'm not going to do anything because you've got a man breaking the law. He escaped from prison, and he's running. He's got to turn himself in first," which makes sense. I mean, that's the law. You just can't hide somewhere and say, when it comes out in my favor, I'll come out of hiding. But, so can you still feel the same way, that this is really worth the risk?
Well, I would go by the advice of my lawyer. And you remember Acts 1 and 2, he felt pretty good about it. And he felt good about this witness. Now,
yeah,
I agree.
Yeah, but he feel good about the jury.
Yeah, I agree. Without Fred Johnson there,
you're
going to have a real hard time. But if I'm Kimball, I ask my lawyer, hey, we've got to open up this thing again. Hey, what about some evidence in the house? Let's, you know, this is a, maybe just by, even though Johnson is not there, maybe this is another opening to really look at some of the faults that were in the trial.
Yeah.
And you can get an appeal, you know, hey, how about some fingerprints? How about some, you know, this and that? And then if you got a man saying that he saw Johnson running from the house, that's a start.
Yeah, don't when you can put them together.
Yeah, but don't you agree?
And, you know,
you
and I guess you could say there's a flaw there, too, once again, that we've complained about with the initial trial, is that we don't know what it was that actually hung Kimball, because the idea of any forensic evidence never even comes into play. I mean, are we supposed to just presume that Gerard was such an idiot that he walked in there and just decided by looking around that Kimball was guilty, didn't bother to bring in anybody to dust for prints? Because he certainly never said anything about it on the stand. All he did was that he said he interviewed 83 one-armed men,
right,
which, you know, from that viewpoint alone, the defense attorney should have said, excuse me, you found 83 one-armed men? Please share with us, where did you find all these guys?
Well, we all know, without a doubt, that this series were to go on today on TV would be a dismal failure. You know that, because TV series involving crime are all about forensic evidence now. That's all they're about. I mean, look at CSI, which has been on, I believe, since 2000. We're talking about 8 years on that series now, and it's all about what did they find and putting it under the microscope and finding the person who did it. And it's absolutely unheard of today from that stuff to be done. I mean, they got away with it because it was the mid-60s. And I suppose back then I wasn't particularly tied into criminal series, but that just didn't go on. They didn't show you anything. They simply said, look, take our word on it. The cops went in there, the detectives went in, they looked around, they didn't see anything, they found their fingerprints, blah, 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 blah. And so, and those of us who were watching TV then had nothing to go by. We'd never seen TV shows that would delve into that kind of stuff. So we accepted it at face value. Oh, you tell us you didn't find any evidence? Okay. Then I guess Kimball must be guilty. You can't get away with that today. You would be shouted right off the screen. I mean, it would be positively laughable.
Well,
one of the problems...
If these attorneys had argued like you guys are, they might have, you know, Kimball might have never gotten convicted in the first place.
And it would have been an even more interesting series. Ken and I are always complaining and whining about the fact that we didn't get that.
All right. Well, listen, we're going to give you a chance to argue some more. We'll take a brief intermission, and then we'll come back to, I guess, discuss Act 4 of Trial by Fire, Talking Fugitive, here on Sherevision Radio.
Excuse me, sir.
What?
Coffee, tea, chemotherapy?
No, thanks. Maybe later. Hi, I'm a smoker, and while most airlines are turning away my business, I'm glad there's a new alternative for people like me.
In the event your cigarettes go out, a plastic mask will drop down, dispensing exhaust fumes directly from our engines. Strap it around your face and inhale normally.
Ah, that's good. So listen, if you like to smoke and you gotta fly, go with the airline that's like an ashtray in the sky.
We put the tar in tarmac. We put our heart in your heart attack. It's no joke.
Your local cardiologist for details.
There we are. Marvin Gaye, Can I Get a Witness? That should have been the theme song for this particular episode, shouldn't it, Bob?
That's what we said. It would have been great.
Yes. All right. We're back for the final segment of Trial by Fire. And let us return to moderator Bobby Neer.
Thanks, Dave. Last year we did a program, The Three Faces of Richard Kimball, focusing on the three actors who played the part. Now we need to focus on the three actors who played the part of Gerard. And since Barry Morris recently passed away, we have decided to devote one program just to him, and then the following program, 2 weeks later, to the two actors from the movie version and the 2000-2001 reprise of the series. First up, though, will be Barry Morris, the man who made Gerard, the tough cop from the small town in Indiana, famous. The Three Faces of Gerard, Part 1, Barry Morris, 2 weeks from tonight on Talking Fugitive. And we haven't mentioned this in quite some time. We do have three books out there, Season 1, Season 2, Season 3 of The Fugitive Views and Reviews. We also have our group still going. If you want to join, we had somebody join today. So that is an ongoing thing. Check that out. The books are available at internet booksellers everywhere, especially Barnes & Noble, and they are readily available. Okay, let's get back to this episode, Act 4, Trial by Fire. Finds Captain Eckhart having finally to deal with the reality of his past. Seems that he had some sort of war injury. Given the time frame here, I suppose that was in Korea. They don't make it clear. I don't think he's quite old enough to have been in World War II. He was given some morphine, and he became at least mildly addicted, since the pain had never really gone away, even after he returned home. He came in contact with this guy in prison, a convicted drug pusher, and bought some morphine from him. Supposedly, he got over it, other than this one relapse, and kept it a secret from then on. Now it's back to haunt him, and Kimball is about to board a bus without knowing that Gerard has a trump card in his back pocket and is betting that a new jury will send Eckhart home disgraced and Kimball right back to the electric chair. It is a very tense moment indeed, and to my great personal delight, while Kimball is on the bus having decided to turn himself in, a man sitting there sees Kimball's photo in the paper where it's splashed across the front page. And he goes over and whispers in his ear, "If it was me, I wouldn't turn myself in. I don't care who my witness was." So, someone finally agrees with me after all. I want to point out that the news about Eckhart's drug problem is not known to anyone at this moment but Gerard and the prosecutor. It is not in the papers. This guy agrees with me even without that. The fact that someone was seen running from the scene of the crime proves nothing. A jury is not going to buy it. They set this up very nicely. It is very tense. We see the bus approaching the courthouse, a few waiting reporters, Donna, the new lawyer, and Gerard looking quite smug and sure that he's about to win. But we don't know if Kimball is still on the bus. When it arrives, everyone gets off, but not Kimball. The man who convinced him to leave does get off and smiles and tips his hat to the waiting crowd, and Gerard looks like he's about ready to explode. I know that Kitty has something to say about Gerard's attitude here regarding Eckhart and his not-so-notorious past drug usage, and she wrote it in her review. So, Kitty, give your view to everybody.
Well, I just found, I've had a lot of complaints about Gerard up to this point, and you know, and as I've said before, I think Gerard has really kind of turned into, as the series goes on, I found him an interesting character when the series first started, but as the series has progressed, I find him very annoying and just kind of more of a mindless, arrogant robot. And for him to take the attitude that he takes at the end where he says, oh, what, you're going to take the word of a junkie? I don't think so. He says something to that effect. And, you know, he is basically implying that Eckhart is nothing more than some street junkie. And it just doesn't make a lot of sense because anybody, and as a cop, if he's ever been to any kind of criminal trial, which if he's working homicide, I would think he's been to a few criminal trials, he ought to know that witnesses come in all different types. My husband was on a jury where the witnesses for the prosecution were people coming in from prison. They were having shackles taken off of them right before they walked into the courtroom to testify. And so to say that Eckhart is not credible, I think is rather unrealistic. It sounds like he would be a war hero. He got addicted to this morphine because he was initially given it by a doctor. I think people look at those kinds of addictions much differently than, say, somebody on the street who is just snorting cocaine or shooting up heroin. You know, because it was initially given to him by a doctor. So for him to take that short-sighted viewpoint is just, I think, out of left field. And again, it really feeds into how Gerard is a very just one-dimensional character. I find him annoying. I would have liked to have seen a little bit of turmoil along the way. I would have liked to have seen a little bit of second guessing of himself. I mean, you don't have to have the man have an epiphany one day, but it would have been interesting to at least see him show a little bit of intelligence and maybe look a little bit at the Cole Kimball case as maybe the rest of the world seems to see it, and maybe have a little bit of grappling from within about it. But at the end, he always finds some reason to go back to his original feeling that Kimball did kill his wife. I mean, I think that would have made a far more interesting character. I mean, right now, as I said before on the board, I've actually advocated killing the guy off because, you know, I see no purpose for him at this point in the series for the most part.
Well, you know what, too? I do agree with you on this to a degree. But I might have agreed with you more about this back in the 1980s than I do now, and here's why. You talk about Gerard being very hard about Eckhart's drug use, but think about this proposed trial that we're supposed to have now. Kimball's going to turn himself in, and there's going to be a new trial, at least a partial trial here, and they're going to put Eckhart on the stand, and it sounds ridiculous to you and to me that a man who was given morphine when he was in a war came home, and he sold it out himself. That doesn't make him a drug addict. But, you know, when there's somebody on the witness stand, you really need to be squeaky clean. How do we find this out? Just think back to the O.J. Simpson case. Look what they did to Mark Furman. I mean, that the whole case turned on that one thing because he had made racial remarks years earlier, and people heard them. And so they took that and took it in and said, well, then obviously he's framing O.J. Simpson. That's an example of how a smart prosecutor can turn on that and make somebody who really hadn't done anything look really, really bad on the witness stand. I think this is really going to be high risk. And this prosecutor here seems like a tough guy. And you got Gerard sitting there, and it may sound ridiculous to you and to me that this one case of Eckhart needing morphine does not make him some sort of drug-addled idiot who didn't really see any of that. But I think that's going to be a tough road to hoe, and they are looking at some trouble. What do you think, Ken?
I'm going to have to agree with Kitty on her Gerard angle, because remember, Kimball has saved the life of Philip Gerard a couple times up to this point, especially Never Wave Goodbye when Gerard was drowning and Kimball saved him. And so, yes, I think Gerard's very arrogant, and he, you know, the series should have been a little bit more realistic and not make Gerard so obsessed. I agree with some of his obsession, but to be a robot and not have any feelings at all, come on. And, you know, the series should have developed more the backstory, and I've complained a lot of times. And this witness, you know, story is really unique to the whole series, and it should have been developed and been a little bit deeper. Right, you know what I'm doing right now, Bob? I'm looking at the screen captures, and
right.
You talked about the scene on the bus.
Right.
Oh, that was excellent.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm looking at Kimball's expression, because the guy in the hat comes over, and he whispers in Kimball's ear, you know, if it was me, I would never turn myself in.
Right.
I don't care who my witness was.
Right.
And Kimball's got that look on his face. It's really, really good drama. And then also, don't forget Donna's reaction at the end there.
Yes.
The look on her face is priceless.
Right. And she actually turns to the lawyer at the very end and mentions that Gerard will never change his mind no matter what. And he says to her he has to feel this way in order to justify what he is doing. So, I mean, he's kind of stuck. You may not like what he's doing, but he's kind of stuck in that now. He's got to see it through till the end. But I still think that that witness is looking at a hard time on the witness stand. I just don't think that Gerard is going to sit in the audience there and let him say, oh, yeah, I saw this guy, and I don't think Richard Kimball did. He's just not going to do it. Everything you just said shows that he's going to be difficult right to the bitter end, and I just don't buy it. So that's the problem. I mean, you say he should have come back. They should have done this in what, season four?
Yeah, about the middle.
Do you think it would have been better if they just had a witness like Eckhart without the drug angle? You think that gets in the way?
The drug angle?
Yeah.
Okay, gives it a little suspense and drama.
Because
okay.
He could have been just a witness. He could have been just a guy riding down the road.
Yeah.
Who was behind Kimball, I mean, and then you can have a trial and you don't...
I think this is one of the first things, you know, the witness, one of the very first things that you can develop into a long-running story.
Oh, sure.
Okay, this is one angle, a witness.
One minute.
And then Donna finds something else, and then you have a story there, and then something else comes up.
I agree with you, and we've talked about this before, and we will as we get into the fourth season later this year, that they should have developed something right there. I want to say one more thing before we run out of time. In that closing scene there where they're all waiting in front of the courthouse, did you see, think about the way the news is today. There are two photographers standing there and two reporters. Two, for the Kimball case. How many do you think would be there today if there was a Kimball case?
Oh, probably 200.
You'd have CNN there, MSNBC, and Fox. It would be on around the clock. Every reporter in America
200.
Would be there. All the trucks would be parked outside. I'm telling you. So he's got there's two reporters there, and the guy on the bus is the only one who notices that Kimball's sitting on the bus, even though his huge picture of it is on the front page of the newspaper. Doesn't everybody in town know that Kimball's been cited? And the headline says, Kimball turns himself in today. And how can only one man see him and recognize him?
All right. So you're saying that people, you know, were not real observant. Is that kind of the conclusion?
Well, they weren't.
Okay.
Anybody else?
All right. Well, listen, that about wraps things up here for Talkin' Fugitive. And I want to remind everybody to stay tuned. Well, stay tuned anyway in an hour. You can stay tuned in between as well. 1 hour Talkin' Television without Dave White tonight, but a good program. John Provost will be the guest. Ed Robertson will be the host. And hopefully all of you will be in the audience. Be back in 2 weeks, folks. We'll talk more Fugitive here on Sheravision Radio.